Я считаю, сожалею, что...
I regret that I was not able to see Perestroika through to the end, and that adventurers came and broke the country apart. They exposed us to competition with developed countries, and our whole economy collapsed. Of course, I feel it. It was a disaster for our country and our people. It caused raging poverty. We are barely climbing out of it today.
Mikhail Gorbachev, the man who, with Boris Yeltsin, unwittingly drove the Communist Party of the Soviet Union to dissolution and eventually brought about the end of the USSR. The Union of Soviet Socialist Republics was to suffer its most critical blow in the final weeks of August 1991, when a coup temporarily toppled Gorbachev from power, brought Yeltsin onto the tanks out the front of the Soviet White House, and within 10 days the Communist Party was outlawed, ending more than 70 years of power. Associate Professor Peter Shearman was a Russian linguist in Britain's Royal Air Force during the Cold War. Now a Russia analyst at Melbourne University, he takes us through the fall of the mighty Soviet Empire.
It was more than a communist system, it was also still effectively an empire controlled from the centre in Moscow. We have to remember that the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics was a union of 15 different republics, each with their own constitution based upon titular nationality.
The Soviet Union and the power of the Communist Party over the 15 constituent or union republics was already in decline by that fateful month 15 years ago. SBS reporter David Brill was a cameraman for the ABC in Moscow in the years leading up to the end of the Communist Party.
I arrived in the Soviet Union, and now back to Russia, of course, in 1989, as communism was starting to crash. And you could see it all over the place. I mean, people were getting incredibly frustrated. They were getting information in from a lot of the other television channels where the stuff's pouring in from across the border, and actually seeing life was better in the West than it was in the Soviet Union. And the demonstrations started to happen the time that I arrived, and they were quite small, some of them, on the first few months. And as time went on, you could see more and more people coming. I remember one demonstration down in Red Square. I think there's something like 200,000 to 300,000 people. And it was just amazing being amongst them, seeing their faces. And I realised, people power, this is going to end. And Gorbachev quietly was letting this happen. It was amazing to see it. But he didn't want the Soviet Union to break up. He thought there was a way of keeping it together that all the states somehow could work together, particularly down in Lithuania, those sort of places, down the Baltic states there. And I went on a trip with him once down to those small countries, Latvia, where he spoke to the people in small groups, pleading with them, please, look, you'll have your independence, but let's try to keep the Commonwealth together so we can do trade and work together and keep it under basically one flag. But it didn't work. They wanted their independence that was taken away from them in the Second World War when they carved up Europe. And it was just to see Gorbachev pleading with them in a way to try to keep it together. But I think deep down, he knew once this thing rolled, there's no way of stopping it.
Gorbachev was leading the charge in remodeling the Soviet Union with his concepts of glasnost and perestroika. He was part of the new thinking of younger communist apparatchiks, a leader that was instituting unprecedented change and openness in contrast to the extreme control of the previous leadership. On SBS's Dateline, he detailed his evolution.
It was a long process and a difficult process. When I was in school, I became a member of the Communist Party. My grandfather was an old communist, my father became a communist at the front lines, and they supported that decision. It was right after the war when Stalin, for us, was a hero, the person who had saved our country, who brought the country to victory in the war. So that was the beginning of Gorbachev. And then it took a long life. It took the evolution at Moscow University. Then for 25 years I was in politics in the provinces. Then I worked with Brezhnev and Andropov for 7 years in the central government. And that opened my eyes to many things. So it was not some kind of revelation. It was not some kind of an angel with white wings that visited me and then gave me the truth. No, that was a process. And it is a process that not everyone is able to kind of undergo.
He realized that he was seeing carriages moving merchandise all over the country, or vegetables or whatever. These carriages were rotting away because they'd break down. So nothing was getting into Moscow. The infrastructure wasn't working, so it just couldn't keep going like that. And he had the guts to come in and try to change it.
Within the party until July 1990, there was an even more progressive voice. The newly elected president of the Russian Republic, Boris Yeltsin, who, as CNN reported in 1990, rivaled with the senior leader.
Boris Yeltsin has probably achieved the biggest political comeback in Soviet history. This ovation and his election to the presidency of the Soviet Union's largest republic goes a long way in obliterating his humiliating fall from power less than 2 years ago. Kicked off the Politburo, Yeltsin was nearly kicked out of the party. Yet it was conciliation Yeltsin first spoke of as he took office. His calls for a kind of coalition government between communists and Democrats helped him win this parliamentary vote over his Gorbachev-backed opponent.
There was a chain reaction of events already in motion that neither of these two large power brokers could stop, and whose actions certainly forced the incredible fall of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, as Dr. Shearman explains.
We could spend hours talking about the root or deep causes of what preceded August 1991, but somewhere around about the 20th or something of July 1991, the reformed Soviet Parliament, the Congress of People's Deputies, approved a new union treaty which would change the relationship between the different components of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. It would no longer be the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, but a new revamped Union of Sovereign States, closer perhaps to the model of the European Union than it was to the old conception of the Soviet Union. Now, clearly there were those in the conservative elements within the leadership that were strongly opposed to giving up central control from Moscow. In a sense, they were quite correct in recognizing that this could cause the eventual collapse of the system itself and the foundations of the state. Gorbachev perhaps made a mistake at that time by going off on holiday on the 18th of August 1991, saying that he would sign the union treaty, I think, on the 20th of that month. So the Conservatives then moved quickly and organized what was called a state emergency committee. They went down to Foros, where Gorbachev was on holiday on the Black Sea coast, and confronted him with an ultimatum that he had to announce a state of emergency. He refused. They went back to Moscow, put him under house arrest on the Black Sea, tanks in the streets, and they made an announcement on television. The so-called Gang of Eights, the leading instigators of the coup, saying that Gorbachev was sick and his vice president, Yanayev, was taking over along with this state emergency committee. What's interesting about the committee, they made some statements and publications, and yet nowhere was Marx or Lenin mentioned, as I recall. And again, I think this links to the conception that they were trying to save the empire rather than perhaps trying to save the communist system itself.
In the Ukrainian Republic in 1991, Olena Kay was going about her business on August the 19th.
I was in Ukraine, in Kyiv. This day, the morning of these days was very strange for me. When I turned up the TV set, I saw not usual program, morning program, but I saw the Swan Lake Ballet. And it was a signal like that something happened in our country, because when in the morning we saw the classical music or the ballet instead of usual morning program, that means that something happened in our country.
Did they do that very often? Did they play Swan Lake if something was happening politically?
Yes, and I thought about my daughter, because she was at that time in Lithuania. It's as you know, it's the Rebel Republic. It was the first republic who decided, the people of this republic decided to leave the Soviet Union.
How did you hear about the change of power after seeing Swan Lake?
The music of Swan, the ballet was stopped and pronounced a very important text. It was the two dictators, man and woman, from Moscow TV set, because I set the program of Moscow, central program, it was Moscow, and they said that group of members of government, they saw that our life is not very good, and they decided to change our life.
The 21st of August, Yeltsin, after standing on his tank and people on the streets opposing the State Emergency Committee, sent a group of people down to the Black Sea to rescue Gorbachev. Then Gorbachev came back to Moscow. Now, when he arrived in Moscow at the airport, I remember distinctly he made some statement to the press that he still had faith ultimately in communism and the party. And yet for Yeltsin, the opposite was the case. This was for him the final nail in the coffin for the Communist Party. And remember, at this time, Yeltsin and Gorbachev were in competition with each other, and it was a competition based upon partly personality, partly power, and partly policy, different conceptions of the future. Gorbachev wanted to continue with perestroika, or reformism and restructuring, in order to save socialism, if you like, or reform socialism. Whereas by this stage, Yeltsin's conception was far more radical. So when Gorbachev arrived back in Moscow on, the 22nd, the next day he was paraded in front of the Russian parliament. And remember, at the time, Yeltsin was the president of the Russian Federation. Gorbachev was the president of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And Yeltsin used that vehicle as the Russian presidency, democratically elected for the first time, a Russian president, by the whole of the Russian people eligible to vote, whereas in fact Gorbachev was only elected to his position as the president by the reformed Congress of People's Deputies. So Yeltsin had more legitimacy, if you like, and there is this picture when Gorbachev came into the Russian parliament. It must have been one of his worst moments in politics, when Yeltsin shuffled up to the podium and thrust under his nose, Gorbachev's nose, a piece of paper and made him read from it. And it was a list of the people that were involved in the attempted coup against him. And the very next day, Gorbachev had no option, really. He resigned his position and basically announced the outlawing of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. So it all there for very quickly unraveled, and on the 25th of December, to fast forward, Gorbachev announced in a TV address that he was giving up the presidency of the Soviet Union, and of course it was then that the end of the Soviet system came into play.
So August was just an incredible turnaround from 70 years of history.
Yeah, absolutely amazing.
After the coup was squashed and Yeltsin came out and stood on the tanks, and then Ukraine called its own independence on the 24th of August,
yes.
How did Ukrainian people feel then? Because this was really breaking away from the Soviet Union.
Yes, some of them were very happy. Some of them were skeptic mood. It's very difficult to say, because a new way, we don't know what the new way we will have.
A little simple thing like a loaf of bread went from something like 4 cents a loaf to nearly a dollar. In many ways, they're worse off now, or they are, than what they were. under communism. So it takes years to turn all this economy around.
Putin, in one of his annual addresses to the nation a couple of years ago, whilst he was president, of course, stated words to the effect that the collapse of the Soviet Union was the biggest geopolitical tragedy of the 20th century.
Not all the people can live a new way in new life. And I see about the old people who are retired, their life is not good, it's unhappy, and they have a pension, and they worked all their life, and now to live for this money, it's very difficult, and I think they are not happy.
But Ukraine has its freedom, its
yes,
own parliament.
Ukraine has a freedom, but nobody can help them.
Was communism doomed to fail just because of some infighting amongst some senior leaders or China's move to a democracy with Chinese characteristics? All of these moves towards democracy, does that just sound the death knell to communism as a theory, a platform?
Not necessarily, I don't think, no. In a sense, one could say that communism has really not been fully tested. The revolution of 1917, of course, was the first revolution in the name of communism, and yet it took place in what was a relatively backward society. And, of course, Lenin stated at the time that this was the weakest link in the imperial chain. It wasn't designed to create socialism in one country, as Stalin instituted a decade or so later. It was designed as a weakest link which would have an impact spillover to the rest of the more advanced capitalist West. So in a sense, you could say the Mensheviks were correct. The Mensheviks, of course, were the opponents of the Bolsheviks, who said that if you read Marx properly, you have to go through different stages. And Russia wasn't really prepared to go straight to the stage of socialism. It had to develop capitalism first and bourgeois democracy. So in a sense, you could say that these were bastardized forms of a non-capitalist path of development, which were something other than communist. But having said all that, of course, were there anything positive to come out of these? Well, yes, of course. I mean, you could give statistics about the physical quality of life being improved for large numbers of people. An awful large number of people were given access to education, to free health, to full employment, and so forth. But the cost certainly in terms of the Soviet Union was probably much, much higher than anybody would be willing to accept as an acceptable price to pay for those achievements that were made.